We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hello again, and I am Tracy Weeks, the Executive Director for CETA, the State Education Technology Directors Association. And I'm so excited to be joined this afternoon by Donna Murray from the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction and Diana McGee, who is at a school district, the Fort Thomas Independent School District in Kentucky. These ladies and I will be talking about things related to digital instructional materials this afternoon. So we've got a district perspective, we've got a state perspective, we'll also look broadly across states for a few things. But before we go any farther, we're going to start with a little poll so we can get to know who all of you are a little bit better. So if you are on a computer, we're going to have a poll. You should see a little poll question pop up on your screen. If you're joining us from a phone and potentially a mobile device, you may not be seeing this, so just be patient. We're just trying to get to know a little bit more when it comes to instructional materials about your role when it comes to instructional materials. And it looks like we have a lot of teachers on with us this afternoon, which is fantastic. And a lot of folks in the other roles. So we've got teachers, curriculum specialists, administrators, we've got some private sector folks, and then we've got some in the other. Oh, we see librarians. Yes. That is an important one. And, you know, well, to be quite honest, I kind of put librarians and technology facilitators in my head in the administrator kind of hat most times. Mm. So you're right. We do have a lot of those. So you should see. So definitely we've got a good number of that. And so I'm going to go ahead and close this out. And we'll go ahead and move along. So we are going to be talking about navigating the digital shift, policies and practices to support digital instructional materials for learning. And this has really come about, and this is not a new topic for CETA, certainly, but it continues to be an important topic as we think through how our schools, our districts, and our states are all moving maybe a little bit, for some, maybe a lot, from print materials to more digital materials. And what does that mean? What does that mean for instruction? What does that mean for leadership? What does that mean for policy? Lots of questions to ask. And again, we've got Donna and Diana and myself today. And I do want to make sure that all of you know, we want to thank EdWeb for hosting us today. But we also, for those of you who are interested in digging in a little bit deeper, we're going to talk about some things over the next hour, but we do have an online community, and I'll tell you more about that in just a moment, but I do want you to kind of keep it. We've got the URL down at the bottom for digital content, and we do hope that you will join our community and really kind of help us think about the things that we haven't, you know, really maybe investigated properly, or share with us your experiences, and we'll give you more information on how to join that community momentarily. So our agenda for this afternoon, we're in the midst of the welcome and introductions at this point. I will start with a national perspective on digital instructional materials, and then Donna will go into our state perspective, Diana will give us a district perspective, and then I will come back and I will give you a demonstration of a tool that CETA has developed called DMAPS. And some of you are very familiar with that, and I'll give you more. And then we'll have time, hopefully, at the end for a little question and answer and discussion time. All right. So Donna and Diana are going to hide themselves at this point so that they don't have to be seen while I do all my talking. And they'll come back and join us at other parts of this. So just a little bit about myself. As I mentioned, I'm the executive director at CETA, And prior to joining CETA, I was in the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction as the Chief Academic and Digital Learning Officer for the state. And also before that, worked with the North Carolina Virtual Public Schools. So glad to be here and glad to be with CETA now as well. Been here a little over a year now. A little bit about CETA. We are a national membership organization, and we work with all of the state and territorial directors that are leaders in education technology at the state education agencies. And our mission is to build and increase the capacity of state and national leaders to improve education through technology policy and practice. You know, CETA is a great place for professional learning, for engaging with others across states. And if you really want to get a handle, if you're one of those people that's passionate about advocating for policy and practice, this is a good place as well. So excited to engage with all of our members. You can follow us on Twitter at CETA. We also want to give a special thank you to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Through their generous support, CETA has been able to produce the materials, both DMAPs as well as several of the publications that we're going to share with you. It's just, we're very thankful for their support to be able to do all of this. And speaking of some of these resources, CETA produces a large number of resources, and we've kind of cherry-picked out the ones related specifically to digital content here on this particular slide. As I mentioned, we'll talk more about DMAPs, which you can get to at dmaps.ceta.org. But we also have a number of other sort of print materials and reports, including the Guide to Quality Instructional Materials, which just came out really just a few months ago, where, you know, it's really helping educators across the nation figure out what are those conversation pieces, what are the questions we should even be asking ourselves when it comes to instructional materials, and making sure that we have high quality materials, and making sure whether materials are in print or online, whether they're free or paid for or open or closed, that we establish what our quality bar is and make sure that we hold all of those materials up to that same standard. So it's a really engaging tool, and I hope you'll all take a look at it and use it. We also have a few reports. We did have the Navigating the Digital Shift report back in 2015, and I'll tell you more about an update we are doing to that report in the next few months. We also have digital content policy briefs from both 2014 and 15. And really kind of the report that kicked all of this off was our out of print report back in 2012. This really was sort of that groundbreaking looking at, you know, we really are going to start to see more and more educators moving out of print and towards digital. And what does that mean? And what are the things we need to think about? So all of those materials are available on CETA's website at CETA.org. And Christine Fox, who is our Deputy Executive Director, is posting links to these items in the chat, so you can also grab them from there. So I mentioned DMAPs, which is the Digital Instructional Materials Acquisition Policies for States, and it is at dmaps.ceta.org. And this is really, it's an online database, and we launched this back in October of 2015, and we actually just updated again this month. So we've got DMAPs, and it's got, we'll take you through a little tour of it later today, later in this webinar. We'll actually walk through it, but it really is a house to look through all of the different states and what their policies are related to digital materials and the procurement and acquisition of those materials. Our members have all contributed to this, along with some other thought leaders as well. So we're excited about this. It's really a way to not only look at what those policies and practices are in different states, but to be able to look side by side and look for states that are like your state, that maybe have the same number of LEAs or same number of students or similar number, and what are they doing with respect to digital materials. So looking forward to kind of taking a walk through that. And it really was a product of collaborative leadership. We had state digital learning leaders along with state instructional materials contacts. We have a group called AIM, and AIM stands for Accessible Educational Materials. And this is a group that is a part of CAST and has worked with us on accessibility sort of issues related to digital materials and what we need to consider in that respect. And then we also had private sector leaders, and all of these different groups came together to really help both give birth to DMAPs and help us with the revision process over the last few months. It was a wonderful collection of data and then an analysis of all that data, and really how can we look at this to make sense of what's going on across the states. There were a number of website enhancements that we've done since the original launch of this. We had an extensive review process. And in fact, I would say we're always going through a review process. There are updates that we do continually to DMAP. So if you go and look at your state and you have information that you think could make it even stronger and more accurate, please reach out to us, because we are constantly posting updates to the site and want it to be the most accurate and reliable tool that we can have for you. Some new data elements that we have unveiled this month. As I mentioned, we worked and partnered with AIM to make sure that we included accessibility policies and practices related to digital instructional materials. So we're very excited about making sure that we take a look at that perspective in our work as well. We also took a look at state-led purchasing consortia. We're seeing a lot of patterns related to what states are doing to really purchase statewide. And included that data and information. We also have details on either content management systems or learning management systems. We have seen a real increase in the use of those types of applications and how do they fit into the whole puzzle when it comes to digital instructional materials. And then also we have some states that have been willing to share out their RFPs so that they can be used as a model to develop new RFPs. So if that's something you're looking for, we've got a few examples there as well that we're excited to share out with you. And as Christina's posted, there is more background on that project. We could go on probably for an hour just talking about that. All right. So I did mention that we are in the midst of doing an update to our Navigating the Shift paper. And that is coming at the end of this month. So we are very, very excited. We are expanding upon our 2015 report. And this time we're really focusing on living and learning in the digital age. We're learning about states' guidance and policies around the implementation of digital instructional materials. We're looking at best practices. We're looking at what the essential conditions are for teaching and learning in a digital environment, and really highlighting the ongoing shifts in policies that we continue to see in states, and then an update on acquisition policies and practices. So we're very excited, and we will have a webinar on that coming in August, I do believe. So very excited to have that update coming, and look forward to sharing that with you. All right, so I'm going to take a back seat now and bring on Donna Murray, who I had the pleasure of working with Donna when I was at the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. And she is part of the Digital Teaching and Learning Division at the North Carolina DPI. And she works with digital content, coaching, communication. She serves the western part of our state and has really been, you know, I'd say looking a lot at the state's digital learning initiative, digital content, OER, really, she's the digital content, I would say, kind of guru from the team. So I'm going to turn off my camera and my mic and let Donna take over.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. All right. So hello, everyone. I'm really excited to share with you an overview of how North Carolina is making the shift to digital content. First of all, here are a few stats about North Carolina. We have 100 counties with 115 school districts, 167 charter schools, over 2,500 schools in all, and we serve over 1.5 million students. So that's just a little bit of information about our state. In the fall of 2015, the Friday Institute for Educational Innovation at NC State University prepared a digital learning plan for the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction and the State Board of Ed. And looking at what was the current landscape of digital learning in North Carolina, the Friday Institute provided a summary of kind of where we were at that moment in time and put together recommendations and goals for where we are headed when it comes to digital learning. And so, as you can see in this graphic, the focus areas of the digital learning plan included everything from human capacity, support systems, content and instruction, infrastructure and devices, local digital learning initiatives, and then, of course, policy and funding is a big piece of that, too. So this plan that the Friday Institute put together is really informing our work at the agency. And we are working in partnership with the Friday Institute to implement this plan. Now that the plan has been developed, we actually call it the Digital Learning Initiative instead of the Digital Learning Plan. So as you hear me talk about the DLI or the Digital Learning Initiative, know that this work is what's driving that focus. As part of the Digital Learning Initiative, we have developed a work stream that is really specifically devoted to digital content. The digital learning plan recommendation regarding digital content is to, as this slide says, improve access to high quality digital learning resources, as well as the systems to locate, create, share, and use those resources. So as part of that work for the digital content work stream, we really needed to stop and think about and speak to stakeholders about that current landscape across the state. So for the next few slides, I want to share with you a little bit about that current landscape in North Carolina. We have a new tool for collecting data about our technology and media programs in our districts and our schools. We call this the Digital Learning and Media Inventory. And part of the inventory includes very specific survey questions related to digital content vetting and usage. So this chart shows that over half of our North Carolina districts report using open education resources, online courseware, partner resources like some of our state partners, as well as like our virtual public school and our School for Science and Math. And almost all of the districts use locally created or purchased subscription-based digital content. So that kind of gives you an idea of what types of content our schools and districts are using. This slide just kind of shares with you some of the most commonly used learning management systems in the state. And that ended up being Edmodo, Canvas, and Google Classroom. As part of our work for kind of determining what's happening in the state right now, we asked the curriculum and instruction leaders across the state to share how they currently vet content. So in this chart, you can see it's really a wide variety from rubrics to checklists to surveys, and even some districts who do piloting of some digital content packages to decide what content would work to meet the needs of their students. So lots of various types of not only content, but learning management systems and vetting processes going on across the state. The Department of Public Instruction in North Carolina has provided districts with a collection of applications that we call HomeBase, with the idea to improve teacher growth and student achievement. This suite of applications that you see on this slide here make up that HomeBase, and it includes an instructional and improvement system, which I'll talk about in more detail in just a moment, the North Carolina Educator Effectiveness System, which includes an online evaluation and professional growth tool, as well as an embedded professional learning system. our student information system, which in North Carolina is PowerSchool. And then the state has negotiated a price point for districts who wish to contract with the learning management system, Canvas. So all of these pieces make up that home-based suite of tools. If we talk a little bit more specifically about the instructional improvement system of Homebase, you'll see that it is made up of our North Carolina Learning Object Repository, the NCLOR, and that's where digital content is tagged and stored, and then that is fed into SchoolNet, which is another part of our instructional improvement system that provides access to those items from the LOR as well, and of course those are standards aligned, and catalog so that it's easy for teachers to find, as well as an assessment and data platform. And then, of course, Canvas is part of this system as well. Just as I mentioned earlier, it's available at that price point that was negotiated for districts to be able to contract with that learning management system and have the content from SchoolNet and the LOR be able to be fed into that. And of course, within Canvas, we also have the North Carolina Canvas Commons, where digital content across North Carolina can be shared. We're really excited about another piece of our instructional improvement system that doesn't necessarily fall under the umbrella of our home-based applications. It's actually something that's been around with us since 1999, and that's our NC Windows for Online Learning, or what we call NC Wise Owl. It includes online subscription resources for our schools. And as I've noted here on this slide, there's really some major strengths that NC Wise Owl provides for our districts, one being quality, access to reliable and appropriate reference sources for our students and for our teachers. Another big piece of this is that providing this NC Wise Owl platform of subscription resources enables districts to save lots of money because we're purchasing this at the state level and therefore saving money from districts having to purchase them individually. And then of course the safety piece of this, where we've got a safe place for students to explore digital content and resources and do research. All of this is available to our schools for free, and students and teachers can actually access this content outside of school as well with the use of a password. So NC Wise Owl has been around for years for us, but it's a key part of our instructional improvement system. So in addition to the current landscape of what we're already kind of doing with digital content, we really started implementing some strategies through the Digital Learning Initiative to move North Carolina forward with the shift to digital content. So I want to share a few of those strategies with you. One of the first steps was really getting an accurate inventory of our digital content that is available in the LOR and in SchoolNet. Through that inventory process, and then with additional information like assessment data, we were able to determine what gaps we have currently with our digital content and begin to prioritize our needs. This has really helped inform our work as far as making decisions around obtaining specific types of digital content, you know, where our gaps are, and really looking at what specific content areas we need additional digital content for. So that was really the first step, kind of getting an inventory and deciding what our needs are. A few years ago, the agency created a rubric for vetting digital content, including for open education resources, and this rubric was adapted from the ACHIEVE rubric, and we call it the North Carolina Summary Rubric. As part of the digital content work that we're doing now, we are reviewing this rubric and determining if there are any needed revisions. So we're doing that through a variety of steps. We're comparing a variety of digital content rubrics that exist, that are kind of widely used out in the field. We're interviewing various stakeholders to see what they feel like are priorities and needs on a rubric. And we're also considering the various users to inform what types of rubrics we actually need to have. So for example, a classroom teacher might just need more of a checklist, when if we're vetting content at the district level, we really might need a more comprehensive rubric to vet content with. So we're really taking a deep look at our NC Summary Rubric and determine what our next steps are moving forward with that. We have a number of strategies that are directly related to that digital learning initiative or the goal related to digital content that talks about providing access to digital content And then also access to the systems where folks can find, vet, and use, and even create digital content. North Carolina is a Go Open state, and our work with the digital content work stream really ties nicely with that Go Open initiative. We have very recently posted an RFP for an open education resources service with the goal of having vetted and standard aligned OER content under to be part of that home-based suite of applications. Another strategy is the development of a digital content consortium. And while we expect this to expand over time, the initial implementation goal of the DCC is to create a suite of digital tools and resources for educators that are aligned directly to the new English Language Arts standard course of study. Part of the scope of work for the Digital Content Consortium will be contracting with educators to create standards aligned lesson plans, parent resources, and quite a few other resources. We're partnering with our institutes of higher ed on this, and we've really tried to make a comprehensive effort to align this work to the implementation science tenets. So we're really excited about those two strategies moving forward to provide more resources for our teachers. And on this slide, I'll share a couple other things that we're doing to increase the amount of digital content our teachers have. We are very fortunate to have state partners who are very passionate about sharing digital content with our teachers and students. So like I mentioned earlier, we've done this inventory where we've determined what our gaps and our needs are with digital content. And we know that we have state partners like our libraries, our museums, our parks, and other state organizations who have digital content ready to share. So we've been working with them to align these resources to state standards, tag them appropriately, and then add them into our learning object repository. We're really excited about this partnership, and our state partners seem equally as excited. We have another event coming up this month where we're going to be working with our state partners on pulling some social studies specific content. Another great partner is our own North Carolina Virtual Public School, which is obviously very familiar with creation and use of digital content. So VPS is currently working to edit some of their current online courses to be included in the Learning Object Repository as packaged course content that could be available in a learning management system. So the edits that our virtual public school are making to these courses is really to pull out any subscription-based content that VPS has contracted to have and replacing it with some OER content so that they can share these courses out to a wider audience. So we're really excited about that work. Another big piece is the modernization of our textbook adoption process. So we are currently reviewing what that process looks like and all the related policies around textbook adoption so that we can begin the transition to an approach that specifically includes the evaluation and adoption of digital resources as well as print. So part of this work is going to include changing to include very specific criteria in the rubrics for the textbook adoption process so that we're really understanding what we need to be looking for digital content from textbook vendors. We're also talking about really being careful to align this adoption process that we have with the standards revision process so that that timeline is really more seamless and kind of goes hand in hand together. Currently, the agency is engaging curriculum and instruction leaders across the state to give us feedback on how to make this process more modern and to include digital content. So we're really just getting started with this work, but we're excited about where this might lead. And this reminds me of one of our school districts that was actually invited to share how they are shifting to the use of a digital textbook and how that has impacted student learning. Asheboro City Schools recently presented to the State Board of Ed and shared the details and the timeline of the implementation of the fifth grade science digital textbook that they've been using. They highlighted the benefits, which included anything from differentiation for their students to having up-to-date content at their fingertips. And they noted that there before the implementation of this digital textbook, their science EOG proficiency was 29%. And 3 years later, that has been increased to 71%. So, you know, that's just one example that kind of reiterates the impact of effective integration of digital content and resources. North Carolina, North Carolina has actually recently developed and had approved a set of digital learning competencies for teachers and administrators. These go into effect July 1st. And embedded in these competencies are lots of specific competencies around digital content and instruction and even digital citizenship. So as our teachers and our administrators are engaged in professional learning around these competencies, we're going to be exploring ways to effectively use digital content and resources to impact student learning. So that's another key piece to our work. So a lot of the strategies I just shared are things that we're working on and will continue to work on, but we're also looking ahead to what were some next steps. So we are in the initial planning stages of a digital content summit, which will be a professional learning event in the state for teachers, instructional support, school and district leaders. It'll kind of be all things digital content. So we'll include some content on OER, NC Wise Owl, SchoolNet, using the rubrics, again, basically kind of all things digital content. So we're really excited about the planning work for that summit. And we are also not forgetting the vital piece to this work. While, you know, we're talking about gaining additional content and the systems that support that content, but we also know that it's vital that we have professional learning in place so that teachers and administrators really understand best practices for finding, vetting, using digital content. So the Digital Content Summit, as well as things like our courses that we are creating, online courses for the digital learning competencies, those are just two examples of professional learning opportunities that we're working on. So those are a couple of things that we're looking at moving forward. There is a lot of work going on in North Carolina around digital content. We're really excited about the efforts that we feel like we're making towards that shift to digital content and resources. Here's contact information. If you have any questions or need additional information, I'd be happy to share with you our work. And thank you, Sita and Edward, for letting us tell the North Carolina story about navigating the shift. And Tracy, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Donna. It's always so good to continue to hear about the exciting work. There are questions in the chat that you can certainly go through and begin to look at and answer, but we will also have a Q&A session after Diana presents as well. So thank you for sharing. There's a lot going on
yes, there is.
In North Carolina digital materials. So now we'll let Donna hide herself and we'll take a little mind break right here and we'll have a little chat question here. And this one you may have to do a little guesswork and do a little thinking right here. But, you know, whether you think about your school, your district, or your state, what proportion of instructional materials would you say are digital versus print? For example, do you think you have a 50-50 balance of digital to print? Or do you think it's more like 20-80 at this point? Are you still more heavy on the print? Do you think you're maybe more towards 70-30. So it'd be interesting to see where people feel like they are in terms of using print versus digital. So seeing, we have an online teacher who says they're 90-10. So yep, an unfair advantage there. I see a lot of 20-80s and 10-90s. I'm seeing a few 40-60s. That's actually moving more towards, you know, more and more towards the digital end. And I see Florida is at about a 60-40 and some 50-50. So we do see some folks in different places. And it is 40-50 instead of 240-50. That's good because I was trying to understand that proportion, Patricia. We'll go ahead and segue now over to Kentucky, and we're so excited. We had a state example, but now to hear what's going on at the district level, and we are so thankful to have Diana Myers-McGee with us today, who is the Director of Technology and Information for the Fort Thomas Independent School District in Kentucky, and you can see both her Twitter handle and her phone number there. She's also a teacher She teaches journalism at the high school level, and she does newspaper and the magazine and the yearbook. So she really does know a lot about material production and material creation, so that's great. She's been president of the Kentucky Society for Technology and Education. Now it's very clear why you will certainly be at ISTE this summer, Diana. Very yes. good. So we're really excited to have her with us and look forward to hearing you share now, and I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, and thank you for inviting me. I am a little nervous about this. This is my first time to do this, so please forgive me and if I don't give you the information that you need, but my contact information is there. Feel free to reach out to me. Like she said, we are the Fort Thomas Independent School District. That is a public school district in the state of Kentucky. There are 173 public schools. And we are one of those school districts in Kentucky. But we are located in the northern tip of the state, which a lot of people say is the southern side of Cincinnati. A lot of people say that the northern part of the state, northern Kentucky, thinks that it's a state in itself. But I'm not from this area. I grew up in another part, in a central part of the state. So I can very objectively say this is a great place to live. I've raised my children here. Being on the other side of Cincinnati makes it a great place to work and live. We are a suburban school district with about 3,100 students. We have 5 schools, 3 elementary, 1 middle, 1 high. Our free and reduced population is 14%, which is very low compared to other parts of the state. Our ethnicity, as you can see on the chart, is more white than anything. And we have approximately 320 staff members. I have worked in this school district for 28 years. That's not my entire career, but I've worked here the majority of my career, and I am very proud to give you the accolades that you see on the screen. We have a 97% attendance rate as well as graduation rate. 98% of our graduates go on to college, and we have 4 of our schools are National Blue Ribbon Schools of Excellence. Very objectively, I can say this is a great place to work. And I am blessed to be able to work in Fort Thomas Schools. So I love this picture of this little boy. Before we digitally converted to a one-to-one environment, we had a few classroom sets of iPads, and this picture was taken of one of our elementary students. And based on the stats that you saw on that last slide, you might be wondering why would we want to digitally convert? We are a very high-performing district, the highest-performing district in the state of Kentucky, but we found that if we did not do something, we would not be living our district's vision and mission, because our vision and our mission is to make sure students are meeting those 21st century skills. Our goals when we headed into digital conversion were to eliminate the digital divide, and what that means is, at first we were thinking of a BYOD solution, but we decided that there are some students in our district who could come with the Cadillac, and some students would have to come with a rental car. So we wanted to make sure that all of our students had the exact same device and eliminate the digital divide in that regard. We wanted to leverage technology as an instructional tool and provide real-world experiences, as well as to maximize the efficient use of resources. What I mean by maximizing the efficient use of resources, our superintendent likes to say that in the business world, you don't ever see executives going down the hall to do computers, but all of our schools had computer labs, so our students would go down the hall to do computers, and we didn't see that as an efficient use of our resources. So we went digitally one-to-one, and were able to collapse some of our labs. We still kept some of them, but the majority of them we have collapsed, and we can use that space differently. This was our implementation in the year 2012. We began our mission and vision work. We spent a year planning and developing around our thoughts of a digital conversion. We visited a lot of schools, some in North Carolina. We went to Mooresville, North Carolina, 2 different times. And in 2014, we opened our digital conversion project with the middle school. They were our pilot grades six, seven, and eight. And all of those students have MacBook Airs. The next year we added the high school in grades 9, 12 with MacBook Airs. And then this past school year, we added our elementary students, K-5. They all have iPads. All of our students take their devices home every day, but they do turn them in for summer break. And so right now my tech team is sorting, categorizing, inventorying, and getting the machines ready to go back out in the fall. These were our desired student outcomes when we started talking about digital conversion. And you can see the ones in color, and I just now noticed that that create did not come across correctly when I converted to Google Slides. The collaborate, communicate, think critically, and create. The four C's, we were all about having these desired student outcomes with our digital conversion, which I'm sure that many districts are very familiar with the four C's. Kentucky is an adoption state. And what that means is that our state department provides standards, contracts, and guidance on what can be purchased. But in the past few years, the State Department has changed a few of the regulations so that we can use funds that were originally earmarked for textbooks for digital resources, including devices. Now, in our district, we were blessed enough to not have to use those funds for our devices, but we have been able to use those funds for our digital resources. We pulled together a team to decide what we were going to purchase as far as curriculum resources when we went into the digital conversion. And we found that we had a similar desire around our outcomes. And we looked at a blended model. We didn't want to throw the textbooks out the window or go completely paperless, but we want teachers to be able to have an option if they need to have the students close the lid and do a paper assessment if needed, or some type of activity that does not involve technology. But we did evaluate all of our instructional resources, and we determined that a lot of our resources we were going to use that were going to be digital. I would say right now in grades 6 through 12, the majority of our resources are digital. I would say it's probably 70-30 or maybe even 80-20. In K-5, with this being our first year, we are a little bit slower on that conversion train, and a lot of our teachers still use the traditional textbooks, but we're getting there. We're doing a new reading series for the fall, and it's going to be digital, and we're moving in that direction. We partnered, this is not on the slide, but we partnered with McGraw-Hill for a lot of our digital resources, and we are very thankful that they are able to help us push our digital conversion forward. One of the things that we discussed is that our instruction, if you're going to be in a digital environment, your instruction has to change. It has to be more interactive and collaborative. And another thing that we decided is that having a learning management system was crucial. We settled on Schoology. That is the learning management system that we use and have used all 3 years. And in our state, in the state of Kentucky, our student information system is Infinite Campus. All public school districts use Infinite Campus. So we have the two of those tied together, not necessarily for grades per se, but they are tied together. Whereas if a new student enrolls, that student automatically is put into Infinite Campus, enrolled into Schoology. We learned that classroom management is something that you have to address with your teachers if you're going to be a digitally converted district. And our next step is in this process is we're moving toward project-based learning. That's our big push for next year. I thought I would give you a couple of quotes by the teachers themselves. This is Ms. Claskins, who's a high school math teacher. And I won't insult your intelligence. You can read that yourself. But I will say that a lot of our teachers have really taken to this digital conversion, and they feel like the access that they have to resources, with the students having that access at their fingertips, is so much more advantageous to the goals that they have set for themselves in their classrooms. As you can see, that last sentence, that has been powerful, because the students have access to all kinds of resources 24/7 every day during the school year. And then the next person is a speech and language therapist. And a lot of times we don't think about the special teachers or the teachers who work with your special needs students, but she has really taken, she doesn't use necessarily digital materials, but she uses the iPads and the apps for various therapy sessions with her students. And it really has improved what she's been able to do with her students. So I'll give you a chance to read that. She uses them for graphic organizers and writing tasks. These are the three things that we have learned with our digital conversion is buy-in is key. And the digital conversion is a process. We set out on a 3 to 5 year goal. We are finishing year three, headed into year four, and we are not by any means experts or to the point where we can say we've got this mastered. Every day is a learning day, and we do face bumps along the road. Before we go to this next slide, I would like to, I've seen a lot of chat here about our librarians, and when we do school visits, one of the things that I say is your librarians are your best kept secret. And so we have found a way to integrate our library media specialists into our tech teams. They serve on all of our curriculum committees, and we couldn't be doing what we're doing in our district without our library media specialists and our instructional technology specialists. All right, I will turn it back over to Tracy.
Thank you, Diana, and I know that she'll go through and look at these questions as well. I'm so glad that you addressed the librarians because I have seen quite a bit of chatter coming up about that as well. So thank you for addressing that. So if you'll bear with me for just a moment, I am going to take you on a quick tour of DMAPS, which is the online database that I mentioned earlier. And this is DMAPS, dmaps.ceda.org. And basically when you get here, you start off with this great map of North Carolina, of the entire United States. I've got North Carolina on the brain today. But you can actually refine your view by number of students, number of schools, number of LEAs. So for instance, if we went down to number of LEAs, it'll now give you this color-coded map so that if you want to look at particular states that might be sort of roughly the same number of LEAs they're trying to serve and manage. So for instance, I'm gonna actually scroll up a little bit because one of the things that you can do, and I'll actually show you from up here, is I can look across states as well on different topics. So for instance, I could look at guidance and policies, and there's a number of things related to that. So for instance, when we talk about accessibility, if I wanted to specifically look at accessibility, you'll see that some of the states actually got kind of grayed out at this point. But some are still available, and you can click on those. Any of those that you would like to take a look at. And actually, if you come down here, it'll actually show these different states that I had selected, and I can continue to select others down here as well. So if I wanted to put Alabama right beside this, I can now look at the guidelines and policies and see which states have policies related to these different items. So for instance, back up here around digital instructional materials and learning resources, having a state definition, we can see that all four of these states that I have selected have established state definitions. I can also look at procurement, I can look at funding, I can look at digital learning resources and vetting. And if I wanna take a deeper dive into the state, if I hover over the state and click on view details, I can actually go in and take a deeper dive. There's actually two tabs up here. There's an at a glance, which will give me more information. Since I clicked on Texas, it'll give me more information, but I can also change my state over here, so I don't have to go all the way back to the front to do that. But then I can also look at the instructional materials as well, Take a deeper dive into any of their specific policies and guidelines. And where we have more information from the state, we've included that. Some states either don't have anything for instance, UC Guidance outside of school, Texas does not provide guidance to LEAs on the use of digital instructional materials outside of the classroom. And then some areas we do have more information. So this will let you, go deeper into different states. I can also look across here. I've got exemplars that I can look at from each state. I mentioned that we have a few states that had some RFPs. This is still a piece that's coming soon, but we do have a few states that are saving, sharing RFPs. Christine had shared out earlier more background, resources, and so on that you can share. And also look at different state profiles. One thing I didn't mention here is that when I select, up to five states, or I can select one state, I can then actually get a download of the comparison of those, up to five states. You can also download all states, and you see a couple of buttons here for the download all. So there are ways to be able to get this information, pull it down, and then be able to continue to crunch that data even further. So you can imagine you could spend lots and lots of time in here, lots of good information that you can share and take a good look at. So very excited to have this to share out with all of you. Please take a look at it. And give us the feedback if you see something that's missing. I'm going to actually give EdWeb just a moment here to bring back up the PowerPoint. But take a look at it. Let us know. I see that New Jersey doesn't have the contacts on their DMAP site. So that's exactly what we need you to do, is go find out who the right person is, or poke them a little bit and tell them to send that information to us. That's exactly what we want you to do. It is a great way, as Deborah just mentioned in the chat area, to be able to do a little research as you begin your advocacy efforts. Like you can say, well, Kentucky has got this going on. Or if you want to find out, you may have a legislator that's interested in doing something with open ed resources. Well, let's go find out what other states are doing this. So it's a really helpful, I think, tool to do a little bit of research and find out what is going on across the country. So we're excited to have that tool, and we hope that you find it very useful. Again, we do want you to continue the conversation. We're coming up almost to the top of the hour here, but the conversation doesn't have to stop. As I mentioned earlier, we do have an online community that is focused on all things related to digital content, and we hope that you will join our community and be an active participant in the community. I'm going to invite Donna and Diana to come back on and see if there's one or two remaining questions that we still had, or if by looking at some of the questions that you saw in the chat, if there are things that you wanted to be able to respond back to and share out. So Donna or Diana, any last thoughts or questions you saw popping up that you want to address?
Well, I was jotting down a couple notes of some questions I saw, and I did see the same thing that I think you had mentioned, Tracy or Diana, one about school librarians and what is their role in all of this. And one person even mentioned they're kind of the forgotten partner. And we definitely, I want to reiterate that in North Carolina, they are a key piece, well, they are anywhere, but in North Carolina, we are making sure that they are a key stakeholder in conversations around moving forward with digital content. So in some of the pieces that I may have mentioned, instructional support, that would include our instructional technology facilitators, our instructional coaches, and our school library and media coordinators. It is unfortunate, I think, that in some cases they're starting to be seen as this forgotten partner or not a key element when they really are. So one of the things that we're really doing to move forward with school libraries in North Carolina is to really be sure to engage those school leaders in professional learning around digital content so that they can support their teachers and have the skill set that they need to turn that professional learning around for their teachers. And again, anytime that we have an opportunity to engage stakeholders in conversations around digital learning, school library and media coordinators are a key element to that work. So I just definitely wanted to mention that. I saw that quite a few times.
Yes, I did as well. Diana, any other thoughts as you've had a chance to look back through?
No, someone just said we need another session for questions. I would just like to reiterate, reach out to me. I am more than willing to help. I will say again, we are not experts, but we're learning a lot every day, and I am more than willing to talk with people, or you've got a couple different emails. I mean, you've got my email and my Twitter handle there, and just reach out. We're willing.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So I would encourage you to email either Donna or Diana, and I would also encourage you to participate in our online community. This is a great place to also engage and try to really, you know, dig in a little bit more deeply and understand what else is going on. So that's really bringing us almost perfectly to the top of the hour. Thank you, great. Donna, and thank you, Diana, for sharing with us all of your efforts. So many exciting things going on in both Kentucky and North Carolina, as there are in many other states and districts across the country. So thank you again. And please email these ladies. They will be happy to share with you and answer any of your questions. So thank you. And I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Day.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you would like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.